You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
For many people, this election comes down to anxieties about immigration. Anti-immigrant activists have blamed undocumented immigrants not only for taking jobs away from Americans and lowering wages, but for violence and terrorism. Yet the reality of immigration is far more complicated, and it overlooks the fact that many of those crossing the border into the United States are children who are fleeing violence. There are organizations across the country and right here in New York that work to ensure that these children are not overlooked and to provide them with the resources that they need. Dr. Alan Shapiro is the medical director and co-founder of Terra Firma, the first medical legal partnership specifically designed to meet the needs of immigrant children. And he joins us now along with Kimberly Chin, the deputy director of the Children's Defense Fund New York, which provides advocacy and a wide range of services for children across the city. I'm very pleased to welcome both of you to our show. Hello.
Thank you.
Alan, what led you to start Terra Firma?
Well, I've been working with immigrant children for many years, over 20 years. We have a community health center and a homeless health care program that is affiliated with Montefiore and the Children's Health Fund. And I was working on a mobile medical unit one afternoon with homeless youth, and I had a young man brought onto my medical unit from Guatemala who had washed all of his medications in the laundry machine. And the medications that he had washed were psychiatric medications.
Had he done it on purpose?
No. What happened was he was a migrant farm worker, an adolescent, working upstate New York, and had a psychotic break, his first psychotic break. He went from the hospital into an immigration detention center. And luckily, at that detention center, he was identified by caseworkers at Catholic Charities who said, hey, this is a child that should not be in a secure detention facility, and was able to get him out. That's a long way to tell you that eventually he came onto my mobile unit and needed services. And that is how I was introduced to his lawyer, because we called up the program to find out what his needs were.
But you thought it was important to connect the medical and legal elements in your organization.
Right. So what the lawyers and case managers at Catholic Charities were telling us was that they were seeing a large number of unaccompanied immigrant children coming into the city needing medical and mental health, in particular mental health services. And they were impressed by the degree of involvement that we had with this child. And that's how we began to talk and really develop our program.
You mentioned that the boy was from Guatemala. Aren't most of these kids from Mexico, as some American politicians claim, or do they come from other parts of Latin America?
Yeah, absolutely not. Kim?
Right. Yeah, we've had it's changed. Since 2011, we've definitely had an increase in the number of unaccompanied minors coming from Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, from Central America, because of the violence and poverty in those countries.
So what kind of violence are they fleeing from?
There's gang violence, drug violence. There's extreme poverty. I think Alan can talk about the anecdotal stories in working with kids, but there's a fear of walking to and from school. There's a fear for your family if you don't join a gang. There's a lot of poverty there. So there is definitely, there are definitely a lot of unaccompanied minors fleeing to the States.
You're with the Children's Defense Fund, which is an older organization. How did it get started?
Well, it started in 1973 with Mrs. Marion Wright Edelman, and she is committed to raising voices for children, to ensuring that we are always doing everything we can in the best interest of children. And so our focus has always been, regardless of where children come from, that we are making policies that impact those kids.
Before the CDF existed, was there a place for children to get access to legal services in the city?
I mean, legal services exist. The Children's Defense Fund is a national organization, and there are legal services within the city. We're actually very fortunate in New York City that the City Council recently allocated, along with Robin Hood Foundation and the New York Community Trust, $1.9 million over the past few years to legal services to specifically help these unaccompanied immigrant children.
Do both of your organizations work together? Do you coordinate things?
We do. We greatly admire the work that Terra Firma does, and they are a model for, as you said, bringing together the medical, legal pieces of the work that's important for these kids.
Terra Firma is a New York organization. What about CDF?
CDF is a national organization. We have state offices in several states around the country.
Alan, when children cross the border illegally into the United States, what are their options for staying in the country legally?
Well, so going back to your first point was, you know, at this point, only about 10% of children coming into this country are Mexican, which is a really big shift from a number of years ago.
And when we say children,
children under 17. 0 to 17 years of age.
Do they tend to be in the lower range or the upper range these days?
They tend to be in the middle range. At our program, which is a medical legal partnership for these children, we see the average age we see is 17 years of age. However, we have seen kids as young as 6 coming into our program.
If a child is granted legal status to stay, can they sponsor their parents for citizenship?
So there are various forms of relief in the immigration courts that these young people have access to, and it's a very, very complex process to get this relief. We have asylum claims, obviously. We have claims for special immigrant juvenile status. We have U visas, which are for those who are victims of crime. We have T visas for those who are victims of trafficking, all very complex, and they all need legal representation. And there are limits to the number of visas there are. So even if kids successfully, for example, get a special immigrant juvenile status decision, they actually might still be waiting for a visa. And, for example, in that case, you actually have to go through two courts, the family court, the state court, to adjudicate the decision as to whether the child has been abandoned or neglected, and then you have to go through immigration court. And in that case, they are not able to continue to bring the parent who they were abandoned by.
Or if they can prove, make a strong case that they were fleeing a violent situation and afraid for their lives, that still doesn't guarantee them asylum?
There are so many kids who have come in now that I think that there is a huge backlog of in the immigration courts, and we want to hope that when you can prove that you have been a victim of violence, that you have been persecuted as these kids have been because of the violence and the gangs in their country, that we can have an asylum claim. But once again, without the resources, without representation, it's very difficult. It's unlike what an immigration judge recently said, that a toddler can learn immigration law, it's actually incredibly complex. And so those who are represented have an incredibly high chance of succeeding. They are 5 times more likely to succeed with their case than those who are not represented.
That wasn't that the person who said that a toddler could learn from the Department of Justice?
It was an immigration judge, yes, correct.
Did anybody laugh when he said that a toddler can learn immigration law?
I believe it was in a deposition, but I'm sure that they did not. And I think that it's ridiculous, and it just sort of goes to the extreme, especially for the really hardworking attorneys who are out there who know how difficult these cases are.
Leonard, you know, I think also what that speaks to is the lack of representation and the huge disparity in representation that children have in this country. So in New York, as Kimberly mentioned, at this point, almost 100% of children in New York City are getting representation because of this public-private partnership. That's not the case in Long Island. And then if you look at other parts of the country, probably only about 30% of children have representation. So you have this situation where a child, could be a very young child, could be a teenager, has to defend themselves in court against a U.S. federal prosecutor. It is absurd.
And if a child in New York City is detained and at risk for deportation, where is he or she sent? Are there special detention facilities?
Well, the process is when they're picked up by the Customs and Border Patrol at the border, they are sent to the care of the Office of Refugee Resettlement. And at that point, they are sort of determined whether they can go on to pursue a case and release to sponsors if they have sponsors in the country. And then they will pursue their removal case and apply for those visas and those make those claims that we discussed earlier.
So they're not sent to Rikers?
No, no. But the detention centers, not the detention centers, the Office of Refugee Resettlement, these centers should be sort of in the best interest of the children, and I think generally they try to be. There are other situations with mothers and children which are sort of a slightly different situation where there are detention centers where children are being placed.
Alan, haven't you seen cases of children with bullet wounds and other evidence of violence?
Absolutely. And, you know, when we talk about the...
Does that work when they're presenting their case?
Yes, absolutely. And that is why the medical legal partnership is so powerful, because we can uncover medical and mental histories that have never been uncovered before that the lawyers can uncover. And then we could use that evidence in testimony. A really interesting statistic for adults, adult asylum seekers, is that if you're an adult asylum seeker and you have had a medical evaluation, you have approximately an 85% chance of winning your asylum case compared to someone who doesn't have a medical evaluation winning about 15% of the time. There's no statistics for children, but in our own work, we have seen how powerful that medical and mental health testimony can be.
So it's a psychological evaluation as well as a medical evaluation.
Absolutely.
And a lot of these kids would have experienced trauma.
So going back to the root causes of violence, the root causes of the children coming here in the first place, in a couple of studies that were done in children in detention by Women's Refugee Committee and the United Nations High Commission of Refugees, they have shown that upwards of 80% of children say that they have left their countries because of violence. Another really important factor, other than the poverty, which most of these children come from, or extreme poverty, is the actual physical and sexual abuse that happens in the household. And that was something that surprised me, although it was found in other studies. And it really points to the lack of protection that children and families have in those countries. So these children are fleeing because they have no other option. And the risk of taking this journey, this perilous journey, 2,000 miles to the U.S. border, sometimes on the top of a freight train, is worth it for both the families and for the children to get to this country rather than stay in their home country and risk being killed.
And when they're on those freight trains, sometimes they become victims during that journey.
Absolutely.
Now, how do these kids come in contact with your organizations? Do they get in touch with you or do you get in touch with them?
Well, I think what the Children's Defense Fund is advocating is that at the Office of Refugee Resettlement, that they provide information about all of these social services and all of these great organizations like Terra Firma that can provide services for the kids before they leave and go to their sponsors, that they connect them with health coverage, they connect them to schools, and they connect them to these organizations. Because on the legal piece, as Alan mentioned, sometimes they're not going to talk about what happened to them in their home country. They don't want to talk about it. It's been so traumatizing. So this care that they provide us at Terra Firma and other organizations is trauma-informed care, which will help in the legal cases and help them make their claims.
I'm speaking with Kimberly Chin, who is the New York Deputy Director of the Children's Defense Fund. She has more than 15 years of experience in advocacy, nonprofit management, and policy analysis in the areas of health, income supports, nutrition programs, immigration, and poverty on behalf of children and families. And Alan Shapiro, who's medical director and co-founder of Terra Firma, also a senior medical director for community pediatric programs, a collaboration between the Children's Hospital at Montefiore and the Children's Health Fund. And we will continue our conversation after this. We're back with Dr. Alan Shapiro, medical director and co-founder of Terra Firma, and Kimberly Chin, the deputy director of the Children's Defense Fund of New York. Earlier, I heard a phrase that I would like to have explained a bit more, trauma-informed care. What does that mean?
Sure. Well, the key to trauma-informed care is that the providers of whatever intervention you're giving really are aware of the aspects of trauma, the possible post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms, And what's really key is that you are not re-traumatizing children or adults by the care you give.
Do we see PTSD in young children?
Absolutely. And it could take the form, if you look at young children, it could take the form of regressive behavior where there's all of a sudden a child who was was never bedwetting, started bedwetting, children who become very clingy, children who start even having self-destructive behavior like biting their arm or cutting themselves. For teenagers, you can see a lot of oppositional behavior, disobedience. And for these children, you have to think about these are children that are now placed sometimes about 50% of the time with their parents or a parent or other relatives that many of them have not seen for more than a decade. And so all of a sudden you have a 17-year-old who's living with a mother and maybe his stepdad who all of a sudden has to follow the rules of, you know, of living in apartment with New York City and sort of not living in the countryside of Guatemala. It creates a lot of friction. And so you have these mental health problems that are that come from their original trauma, and then that's layered onto a very sort of stressful new environment.
Which you're calling re-traumatizing.
Which can be re-traumatizing for sure.
So if a child doesn't want to talk about the causes of the trauma, then that would add to the problems. And we have heard again and again about returning veterans who have PTSD who don't want to talk about what went on. I'm assuming the same sort of thing happens with these kids. They may not even be aware that they have been traumatized.
Yeah,
I think that's absolutely true. And that's, as we come back to the legal part of it, that then causes a problem when you're trying to make these claims about violence and trauma and terror that happened in those home countries. So yes, it is very important that there is synergy between sort of the behavioral health issues that are being serviced as well as the legal services issues.
Ellen, don't you offer dance classes and Zumba to these kids?
We do. And
that's a way of getting
I'm glad you mentioned
them a little fun.
Because our executive director who runs our Zumba classes, Debbie Snyder, would be very happy to hear that you mentioned it. You know, our program is really designed, we have a couple of goals in mind. One is to provide a medical home for children. One is to collaborate closely with the legal team to really help children win their case. But it's also to foster acculturation and normalization. And part of that is to offer support groups for teenagers, cooking classes. In the summer, we have English classes, as well as we collaborate with South Bronx United to have a soccer team, and also with International Center for Photography to run a photography program.
And both of you, your offices are located in the South Bronx. Is that where most of these kids come to?
Our office is actually in Manhattan, Lower Manhattan. Sorry, but yes, Terra Firma is in the South Bronx.
Yeah.
Is that just because you're at Montefiore?
There's a number of reasons why we ended up in the South Bronx, primarily because the Children's Health Fund ran a homeless health care program, and a lot of formerly homeless families were being placed there.
Mm-hmm.
But the beauty of our program is that it is located where a large percentage of children live. We actually live in a very interesting community that has a large number of Garifuna families from Guatemala and Honduras. And it really makes it easy for them to access all the services, sort of a one-stop shopping model at our health center. So Terra Firma is embedded in a community health center in the South Bronx.
And I think this is the Cadillac version of what we should be doing for these young people. And that's what we really want to, as a Children's Defense Fund, advocate for more of this in the places that young people are. I worked actually last year at the Ferrick Center for Justice at Fordham Law School, and we did a lot of work with the Vera Center and with these young people. And it came up a lot, sort of this need to normalize and play soccer. And that's how we get to these other issues, is through soccer, through dance. I think one of the children said, or one of the providers said, they don't come here for legal services, they come here for soccer. And that's how we get to them and to their issues.
It's a form of group therapy, or do you actually offer regular group therapy?
Well, what Kimberly's talking about, I think, also speaks to just developing a sense of trust, which is so important. But we absolutely order individual and group therapy programs for the children.
And one of the groups that your organization works with is the African-Caribbean Garifuna. Can you tell us about that population?
Yeah, it's a fascinating population, and they are folks of originally African and Amerindian descent who were a group of slaves washed up on the shores of St. Vincent's Island and mixed with the Amerindians there, eventually were pushed off by the English and British, by the English and French, and ended up in the Central American coast. There's a huge diaspora of Garifuna, and the latest thing I have read is that the Bronx has the highest percentage of Garifuna people in the world living here.
They're discriminated against in their home country?
Yes, and that's a very important fact because one of the things, one of the real root causes of a lot of the children leaving is that ethnic minorities such as the Guatemalan Indian tribes and the Garifuna are targeted by gangs specifically because they're powerless and because they have no other forms of retribution. So they have to, you know, they have to, they're very vulnerable populations.
How do U.S. laws address these kinds of things? Are we just kind of lumping everybody together?
Well, at some point, I think we do need to get to the root causes of what's happening in these countries. And I think that that's, you know, as Alan said, the number of kids coming into New York City, unaccompanied immigrant kids, have been about 4,500 this year, this fiscal year. In 2014, it was higher. 2015, it was lower. So we're going back up again. And it's going to be the new normal if we don't sort of address the root causes within these countries, the issues of poverty and gang violence.
The reason I ask is that there's a certain scandal related to what happened during World War II, where it was possible that an Anne Frank could have wound up coming to the United States. She had all of the qualifications, and yet she was denied that access. So are we seeing something similar here? Have we not learned from our past history?
Right now, we have the greatest migration of people around the globe, and I think that the U.S. does have to come to terms with our great sort of refugee crisis is coming from Central America, and I think we do need to address it. And I think, as you talked about the different legal services that we offer, this idea that these are refugees, not migrants. They are fleeing persecution and violence in their home countries.
But so are refugees from Syria and from Iraq. Has the whole thing wound up becoming lumped together?
I think for us, for the Children's Defense Fund, we really want to focus on the children. I think also with Terra Firma, this idea that children are children, regardless of where they come from, and we need to make sure that we support and protect them and offer them the services and the supports that they need to thrive and survive, regardless of where they came from.
Yeah, is it tougher now because of all the political rhetoric?
I'll tell you what's tough. I work at a health center that serves a large Mexican and newly arrived a Muslim population from West Africa. And I have kids coming to my clinic saying, like, why is a presidential candidate talking about our people this way? That makes my job really difficult. And, you know, from that standpoint, it's pretty horrendous.
I'm speaking with Dr. Alan Shapiro, medical director and co-founder of Terra Firma, and Kimberly Chin, the deputy director of the Children's Defense Fund, New York. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Ludwig Lopate. President Obama has a mixed legacy when it comes to immigration. He has fought for legislation to help undocumented immigrants, but he has also been called the deporter-in-chief for the large numbers of deportations that have occurred under his administration. Do you think he's left a positive or a negative impact for the children that you're dealing with?
I think there have been additional resources that the Justice Department is looking at to increase to help these children. I think that there is more. As an advocate, I will always say that there is more that can be done for the children that are coming across to not re-traumatize them, to make sure that we expedite the process, but in a way that safeguards their protections and their claims. And so I have to say it is a mixed bag.
Well, one member of Congress has said that all of the kids coming across from Mexico have calves the size of cantaloupes because they're small, but they're carrying so much marijuana across the border.
I mean, that's just pure racism in my point of view. And it's ignorance, and it's really statements to generate fear and not based in reality.
Are the children you work with ever deported?
the children are repatriated back if their claims are not made. If those claims are made when they have are made and they do not have legal services or legal representation, then we have a concern that the claims were not adequately raised. But there are sort of programs to help repatriate safely, and I don't know that it is safe at this point when there is so much violence and poverty in the countries that they are coming from.
And we know that kids who do get sent back do get killed. The other population that we've seen a large percentage of children coming in with are those with parents, which have really paralleled the numbers of unaccompanied immigrant children. So the accompanied children are also at risk for deportation with their families, and they're at risk for getting killed as well.
What about the ones who are not accompanied? How do they wind up in New York City? I could understand they're winding up in Arizona, New Mexico, or Texas, or even California, but New York City's pretty far from the border.
Well, those who are apprehended at the border, that's where they are apprehended. But they are, if they have potential sponsors in these states like New York, then they will be sent to New York to look for those sponsors, to try to get those sponsors to help them through the immigration process. So I think California, Texas, and New York are the largest states taking in these kids at this point.
I mean, if you think about it, you know, a lot of Central Americans are not going to settle in Arizona. So, you know, a lot do settle in communities in New York.
Why, Joe Arpaio isn't happy to see them?
Exactly.
Is that the problem?
Exactly. And so many have settled in New York City. Many have settled in Long Island. There's large Central American communities. And so the reunification process is really to send a child back to a family member.
Are there certain communities in the area that are stronger in their support systems for these children? Is the South Bronx particularly good?
New York City has been fantastic. New York City, from all levels of government and private and non-for-profit organizations, have really rallied around these children. I'm sad to say the same is not true for Long Island, where children have been have had trouble getting into the school system. All children, regardless of their documentation status, are legally have a right to be in school. And so it's very troubling for us to see communities in Long Island that have tried to block kids from coming in.
Do you think it's partly because New York City is a city of immigrants, so people are more in touch with their own histories?
I think that's true. I think the commitment...
Suburbia was an escape from all of that.
Right. But the New York City Council commitment to assisting these unaccompanied immigrant children in legal services just demonstrates the commitment that New York City has made, as Alan said, on all levels, to the kids that are coming.
Should I assume that Children's Defense Fund has a presence in Long Island?
We're working with partners in Long Island, absolutely.
I would say that...
What about Terra Firma?
Yes. In fact, because of Children's Defense Fund, who have been just incredible advocates for these children, they've actually we're trying to now replicate Terra Firma at a couple of sites in Long Island through the CDF.
Now, what about the economics of all of this? We hear about coyotes bringing people across the border, and they have to pay for that service. Do these kids arrive as very, very young or young teenagers in serious debt? How does that get dealt with?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the problems we have with keeping kids in school is that there's a conflict between them being in school during the day and actually working to pay off that debt. I think, luckily, many of the children we see have family members that are footing that bill and really helping the kids and letting the kids go to school. But some of the older kids, some of the children that don't have closer family ties, really are bound to make that money to pay their families back. Or sometimes those families back in their home countries can be victims of violence because they haven't paid back debt.
Or they could be joining families that are here where the families are undocumented. So does that just add to the legal problems?
There are many layers of legal problems with the immigrant community. We have many mixed families where you have documented and undocumented within the same family, and that causes all sorts of issues around legal status. But at the same time,
in fact, that's become part of the political debate, whether children born here who are automatically U.S. citizens should be considered automatically U.S. citizens.
Well, that is the law of the land, so that's where we are now.
You should tell that to some politicians.
I can, but I think that we do need to look at these different mixed families as far as status, but also know that within New York City we are as Alan said, really willing to provide the services to make these families whole, whether it's going to school, whether it's housing, whether it's education or health care.
And so much of this has to be done in Spanish. Has that become a problem?
Para nosotros, no. No. You know, we our health center serves a large Latino population, and so the vast majority of our staff speak Spanish. Interestingly, we are seeing more West Africans coming into the program and into the community, as well as ethnic minorities. So there are families who speak Mam or Quiché, and that does become more challenging, although we have translational services to be able to work with those families.
And that is especially a challenge within the legal piece of it in the courts. When you don't have the translators in these indigenous languages, then we really are not able to move the cases along.
In the past, it was largely Asian children who needed these services. So have we seen a lessening of that?
I think there's a growing of everything else, I think, is what's happened. There are so many different languages that are, as we know, in Queens alone, there are, I think, what, over 200 languages or something. And so I think that within the court system, though, this really slows the system down when you don't have translators in all of these indigenous languages.
Thank you both so much for being on our show. Kimberly Chin is the Children's Defense Fund's New York Deputy Director. Excuse me. And Alan Shapiro is the medical director and co-founder of Terra Firma, also the senior medical director of Community Pediatric Programs, a collaboration between the Children's Hospital at Montefiore and the Children's Health Fund. It's been a pleasure having you on our show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much, Leonard.